Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Our number to remember is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Jot it down because our computer expert is here, Jake Cunningham. Jake is the managing partner of Brown Trout Systems, LLC of Old Chatham, New York. And additional support for this program comes from Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute, Utica, New York, featuring Shadow of the Sphinx, Ancient Egypt and Its Influence, and, MWPAI.org. Jake Cunningham, always nice to have you here. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
I am well. And then, once again, the number to call if you have a computer question, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So, what's your summer been like? I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, it's been pretty mild, pretty mild. I'm running around trying to make a living and keep my family under a roof.
That's noble, a noble cause indeed. I know what you're talking about. So, I got thinking about, what are mobile hotspots?
Mobile hotspot would be something that... it's essentially a cell phone that will emit a Wi-Fi signal. And what that allows you to do is, your cell phone is on the internet,
right?
If it's a smartphone, of course. But what a mobile hotspot would allow you to do is, your phone, a lot of smartphones also have Wi-Fi,
right? As mine does,
right? So what this does is it makes your phone act like a router, and now instead of, say, at your home, you have a router that has Wi-Fi on it,
yeah,
and it routes multiple computers into the internet. This way, your cell phone can have that function. So your other computers could connect to your cell phone to connect to the internet using the cell phone's internet connection.
You know, I got thinking about it because I've seen many ads now for it, and it seems to me that the companies that sell these devices that have this ability to make a mobile hotspot also are the same ones that are now metering your usage. And so doesn't that just burn through your data?
It does. It does. In fact, I was looking at I use a piece of equipment in my home called a Astaro home gateway.
You can
load it up on any old PC you want.
Yeah.
And every day it gives me reports about all the internet traffic that's going through my house. Now, generally on a daily basis, I have a teenage daughter and two of them, and we transmit almost 2 gigs of data through my internet connection at home a day.
Okay, and that's the home connection. So, in other words, you're not actually metered there, right?
No, because it's truly unlimited. So, what's been happening now in the cell markets is that their quote unquote unlimited package is not really unlimited.
It slows down after a bit. Yes,
they do throttling as well. So if you get to a certain limit, they'll slow you down until your bandwidth consumption on a per hour basis is within a range, or some of them just turn you off. Period. After you get to, say, 5 gigs a month or 5 gigs a day, they won't allow you to do any more.
Yeah, 5 gigs a month would be fairly strict. to be tethered to.
But for a cell phone, that's not your main, generally it's not your main internet connection, but there are some that are the plans, or some of them are that small.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Jake Cunningham is our guest. We go to Dinah in Hopewell Junction. Dinah, or is it
it's
Dina?
Dina. That's
Dina.
All right. It's Dina. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi.
I work on a PC and a MacBook and Mac Pro. My PC is old. I'm running, I think, Windows. It's a Windows XP Professional 2003, 2004. I checked. I can't upgrade it to 2010. So I would like to know if there's an easy way to transfer my files from my PC to my MacBook.
There are a couple different ways you can accomplish that goal. Probably the simplest way would be to use a memory stick, which would be a USB type of memory stick. You would just plug it into your PC, copy your files onto that, take that memory stick, plug it into your Mac, and copy your files over to your Mac.
Is that the same as they call a flash drive?
Flash drive.
Right. Actually, I'm sorry to interject. I back up my files on a, I think it's an HD, it's a 2T you know, so I have the capacity. I backed up just my files, not the programs, of course. But the files will transfer easily to a Mac, even though it's a different version for my documents.
Yeah, I mean, you said you're using, I think you mentioned you're using Mac, Office 2003?
Yes, it's XP Professional, yes.
Office XP Professional?
2000? Yes.
I mean, so...
Windows.
Well, okay, so let's talk. We've got two things going on here. You have an operating system, and
yes,
you have software. So the operating system would be XP.
Yes.
And there was a version of Microsoft Office called Office XP, and then later on became Office 2003, which then has become Office 2008, and now is Office 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So those are different software packages that help you create documents and spreadsheets and presentations, things of that sort. So there should be no problem between you putting a file on a flash drive from your PC and then putting it into your Mac and having the Mac be able to read that file. Now, you may find some incompatibilities with older Office programs and your newer Office programs with respect to some minor formatting changes or some things that the software is incapable of understanding. So often you might either A, not have a particular font available, or some sort of formatting is no longer supported, and they'll so your document may not look exactly the same as it did when it was on XP. But moving to the Mac, you shouldn't have a problem with either A, the file itself, or B, the formatting within the file.
All right. Well, good luck, Dina. We thank you for the call.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you so much.
It's the Computer Show on Vox Pop today. Jake Cunningham is our guest. The phone number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Eric in West Shokan, you're up.
Hi, this is Eric. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Eric.
I'm calling about Mac operating systems. Recently, we're having a problem since we've downloaded the new Mountain Lion and started using the iCloud. We noticed that when the system is sitting for a while and it goes to sleep for a little while, meaning, you know, usually more than, say, half an hour or so, it doesn't wake up completely, and the screen oftentimes will be gray, and we have to do like a hard close. And sometimes even when you try and move the mouse, it kind of just makes a smear of where the cursor would be across the display. I've called Apple and did do a reset of the hardware and tried to do an update, and they said they don't really know too much as far as, you know, having many users having this problem, other than it might be hard for the system to wake up. But we still have this problem.
Okay.
Well, that's an interesting one. I think that you're, well... what you're saying is that when you walk away from the computer, it goes into, say, what they, you know, into a sleep mode or a power nap or whatever Apple's calling it these days. And it's not it's not recovering from that power nap when you come back in.
Correct. So, and two of the things that we did try already, or that I did try already, was one, resetting the hardware settings. And then, two, changing the settings so the hard drive never goes to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it so the display will go to sleep, but I moved the setting all the way over so the hard drive's not supposed to go to sleep, and it's still doing it.
Hmm.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'd probably say that you're not the only person that's experiencing that, and it's simply it's an issue that you're going to find with Mountain Lion, and it will soon be fixed with the next release, is going to be my guess. You know, Apple puts out the software, and this commonly happens, and if you talk to some Apple enthusiasts, they'll say that, you know, getting the very first release of the new operating system often has some problems with it, and it's good to wait a little bit before you jump in, as long as you're willing to deal with some of the things that may cause that may be perceived as problems. I mean, do you end up having to actually reboot the computer because it doesn't wake up?
Correct. It's actually, when I say hard close, I mean I have to hold the button down until it shuts down and then restart it by pressing the button. But, in some ways we're kind of stuck as far as having to wait because all of our machines are Macs, so...
Yeah, I would definitely continue checking your software updates for the Mac, and then I haven't looked at how to do this, but I may try to actually turn off the napping feature altogether.
Oh, that's a good idea. Hey, Eric, we have to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. Jake Cunningham is our guest. It's The Computer Show. Get in line, 800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Rhinebeck Artist Shops, Rhinebeck, and their expanded store in New Paltz, providing fine art materials for students and professionals and picture framing for over 30 years. RhinebeckArt.com. The Olana Partnership and the Olana State Historic Site, presenting Japanese kite making on Saturday, September 1st, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Visitor Center, Olana.org. The Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton, since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor, bluebonnetdiner.net. And Brattleboro, Vermont, featuring music, art, and other cultural activities throughout the fall season in the greater Brattleboro area, brattleborochamber.org.
One 800-348-2551. The Computer Show. Jake Cunningham is the managing partner of Brown Trout Systems of Old Chatham, New York. After obtaining his bachelor's in mechanical engineering and master's in computer science from Union College, he worked as an AT&T data systems consultant and later created Brown Trout Systems. When he's not solving technology issues, he's managing partner of Chatham Brewing, I should say, and that's an award-winning microbrewery in Chatham, New York. So I suppose, you know, you could always throw the odd brewing question Jake's way as well, and we'll see what happens. Maybe we can find a question that involves beer and computers.
Generally, that's someone poured their beer on their keyboard.
Oh, yeah, I've done that. Let's go to John in, where are you calling from? Conoco?
Oh, hello. Hello. Yes. My name's John, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes. My question is this. I have sometimes would like to... insert a photo, a JPEG, and a document into the body of email, and I still cannot figure out how to do that. I mean, I know how to do it as an attachment, but how do you do that as in the body of the email?
Well, generally, if you want to do something like that, you use the paste buffer. It's called the paste buffer. It's like cut and paste. So you would...
I've tried that, copying and pasting, and it won't accept it.
I bet he's not set for HTML. I bet it's plain text.
Yeah, so is this in Outlook or is this in web? This is in webmail?
This is webmail, Verizon Yahoo or Juno webmail, yes.
Yeah, I think you can actually tell those systems that you want to use an HTML style of your email. In other words, mail that would support special characters and formatting as opposed to just plain text.
I see.
And in which case, there may be a little button at the top of your editor which says something like HTML or something with respect to the format of your email. And then
right. In
there, you could just do a cut and paste. But you're not cut and pasting the file. What you want to do for cut and paste is you want to open that file into an editing mode and then select the part of the image that you want to copy and put that into the buffer and then paste that from in there. So not doing it as a file. So if you click on a file and you copy that file and then you try to paste that into your webmail, that won't work. What you need to copy is the actual image, not the file.
So you want to see it.
You want to see it.
Right-click it and then copy it.
So if you're using a PC, I would say use the Paint program, open up the image, and then use the Select tool to select the image, whether it's the whole image or not. You can use the keyboard command, a Control-A will select the entire image. You do that, then put that image into the buffer, and I'm pretty sure you'll be able to paste that into your the content of your document.
Okay, but so and then a Word doc, for example, like a resume that's been formatted. Usually, when I copy that in, it comes out. It doesn't come out the way it.
You would do that similarly as well. You would get the content of that image and then paste it directly into the document.
Through the HTML.
Sort of. I mean, a lot of these programs like Word and other document systems are using something similar to HTML. Some of them, but HTML is the core. It's the things that you don't see in a document. So there's an interpreter making it look pretty on your screen.
Right.
But I think what you want to do is open that image for editing and then select that image and copy that into the paste buffer. And then from there, paste that directly into either your Word document or your webmail or anything. It should work.
All right. Thank you very much.
John, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We do the computer show every so often, and Jake Cunningham, nice enough to come here today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Barbara in Ballston Lake, you're on. Barbara, hi.
Hi. I'm not really that great on the computer, but this is a real frustration for me in regard to I like to occasionally write something and print it, which I have no problem with the printing. But up comes when I write something, I don't put in the email address because I just want to print it. And this is AOL. And up comes, write mail has changed. I haven't changed anything. Hmm. So if it goes to, you have options of, change, cancel. And if you don't save it, then the whole thing is wiped out. So is there a way to get rid of this write mail has changed?
Let's see. I haven't used AOL in a long time, but I think are you using the email?
Yeah, I get on
in order to write documents and then print them out.
Yeah, instead of going to a document situation and having it saved and all that, I just go to the email and to my email and I write out something I want to print it and then it comes up. Write mail has changed. And if doesn't cancel.
Okay.
So
what's happening is with AOL, you start with a blank document,
yes.
A blank email that you're creating or that you're typing information into. And when you go to print, since this is a web-based application, what it needs to do is it actually has to go ahead and save that information from your email into something because at that point, when you're done typing and you hit print, the information that you've actually typed into that email message hasn't been saved anywhere. It's only on your screen, on your computer. It's not saved at AOL. It's not saved anywhere. If you leave that web page, all that goes away. And so when you click print, the software is actually forcing an update to that page to say, save this information and then print it.
Ah.
'Cause the printing feature doesn't actually print what's on your screen. It prints what's presented to it from the system and from your browser. And your browser has to save that page and then send it to the printer. And it's saying that the document has changed. Write mail has changed. In other words, you've typed something in here and we need to save this before we can print it.
Mm.
And if you click cancel, then it just goes away because...
No, it doesn't go away on cancel.
Well, in cancel, you're actually telling it not to do anything. But if you...
It just comes right back up.
It comes right back up, but you're not going to save it anywhere and it's not going to print either because you're canceling the whole operation.
So save it first.
Right.
Yeah.
If you save it as a draft or save it in some way and then print it, or just go ahead and say, yes, save it, and then print it. Sure, that should work.
All right, Barbara.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That's awful nice that we helped somebody out. Do you feel better?
I do.
All right, let's go. We've lost. Let's go to Scott in New York. Where are you calling from in New York, Scott?
Hello. Hello, this is Julie from Schenectady.
Okay.
Oh.
You're not Scott in New York. Hello, Julie in Schenectady. Welcome aboard.
Okay. I have a question about backups. So I have a PC and a laptop. The PC has 3 hard drives. And let's call them C, F, and G, because that's what they're labeled. Then C is where all my software resides and operating system files, and the F drive is my user files, and my G is my backups. So what I'm finding is I want to backups to that. I have Windows 7 on my system, and Windows 7 has this backup feature. When it creates a backup, it creates these weird large files that have labels that identify periods of time, like a week.
Right.
Okay, so routinely, it backs up 3 weeks from the files that it's supposed to back up from, and then it fills the G drive up. And then I have to delete backups, and I really don't know what I'm deleting. So what I want to do is every time I create a new file or update an older file, and the files have a new timestamp on them, so I just want a backup routine to go back up every file every, say, 24 hours, that has been changed or has been added, and that's not what Windows 7 is doing, and I don't know why it's doing what it's doing, and I wonder if you have any suggestions about a better way.
Hmm. Well, I'd have to. I haven't delved that much into the Windows 7 backup routines. What it's trying to do is create a recoverable image of your computer at any given time.
Right.
And so I think you can set you can change some of the settings in the Windows backup that will allow you to not back up as many copies of the information and or not back up parts of your hard drive that don't need to be backed up. So if you have all your software and you're not looking to do a full system restore in the event of a disaster, then you can tell Windows Backup to just back up your user files, in which case it will do that on a regular basis. And then you can tell it to not keep multiple copies of the of your files as well. So that'll make your backups even smaller.
Yeah.
I would suggest that you invest in a removable media for backup as well, that you can keep off-site if your data is important, and or a contract with an online backup service as well, so that you're truly protected. I mean, the way backup should be I think the term is 3-2-1, three sets of the data, 2 different types of media, and 1 off-site.
Wow. So that can be costly.
Yeah, but then again, it could be even more costly to lose the data. That's the big
Fair
problem.
Enough. All right. Well, I believe it's Julie, right, in Schenectady?
Yes. Yes. All day.
Thanks. Thanks, Julie. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Laura in Stone Ridge, I think. Laura.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Good. You're on.
Yes. My question has to do with my work environment. I work in a school, and we've been predominantly PC-based for all the years I've worked there, 20. We recently, last year, got a Mac Lab, and it's Intel, so it runs both a dual system, Mac and Windows.
Okay.
However, when they haven't been booting it up in Mac because the Mac platform isn't hooked up to the server, so when the students go and create their graphics, they can't save it on the server, so there's no backup for them. And I wondered, and the IT guy, it doesn't want to hook the Mac part of it up to the server, and I wondered what the reason was, because we have lots of glitches the reason we got the Macs is because the graphics program runs so seamlessly on them. They don't necessarily on Windows. And I wonder what the reason would be.
Okay, that's a great question.
Well, I'm a little perplexed as to why they wouldn't hook the Macs up to the server. There really shouldn't be an issue with connecting the Macs to the server. If it's an older server, you might have some issues with some of the security protocols, depending upon whether or not the Mac will be able to join what's called Active Directory with respect to the Windows server, which becomes an authoritative source of permissioning and usage on your entire network.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the newer Macs and the newer Windows operating systems work relatively seamlessly together, which allow the clients, the client being the PC on your desk, to communicate and fit within the server. In other words, save files, open directories, shared directories, and save files, and use shared printers and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
And just the same way a PC would, and also fit within the security model that the Windows server is going to impose on those PCs at the office. So, because you can do a lot of different things with respect to how a PC, a client PC, will function in the network, what programs it can use, mm-hmm. what times it can go on the internet, what times it can't, what sort of access to the internet it can have, what files can be accessible, by who and by when, based on their login ID, or even just based on an actual computer ID. So there's a lot of different, you might say, moving parts involved. And at this point, they may, I don't know if this is a relatively new system, they may want to just work out and lock down the Windows side before they open up the Mac side, because it will give them, they will have to do a couple of things to make it work. But there really shouldn't be a reason why you wouldn't have full access to shared folders on the server, whether you're in running a Mac operating system or a PC operating system.
So I guess that doesn't really help you then, Laura. We don't know exactly why.
Well, I just was perplexed that we were running brand new Windows up-to-date Windows programs on all the PCs, in the school, which are about 2 years old. And the Mac Lab has been up and running for a year. So, and there were just all these glitches. It seemed like it'd be easier to have it on the server. So, it didn't answer my problem, but that's okay.
Another satisfied customer. Laura, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, you win some, you lose some. That's all right. Jake Cunningham is our guest. The number to call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Mary in Slingerlands. Mary, you're on.
Yes, I'm turning off my radio.
Good idea.
I have just purchased a Mac. Always been
Congratulations.
With PCs. Well, don't congratulate me. I'm having a terrible time.
Uh-oh.
And interesting, your answer to the first caller today, I was just shaking my head saying, no, it's not that easy. I have XP. I'm coming from Windows XP into my, so trying to transfer that. It's been a very complicated process to transfer everything, particularly in Outlook, to transfer my folders, to transfer my address book. I had to have software to put in first. It couldn't be done through, or they told me it couldn't be done whatever you call it.
Flash drive or one
flash
of those.
Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, one of those things. So they put that in, but I hired a tech firm to do all of this, and I'm just ready to tear my hair out. My main question is, I am saying, what is it going to cost? Can I trade this in for another PC? I'm just beside myself. And they're telling me that the new Windows software, the latest Windows software, is going to have just as high a learning curve as it is taking me to get to understand my Mac.
You're kidding me.
I have not heard
that. Is that true, Jay?
Okay, that's interesting.
Well, I think, so here's what we're looking at. I have to apologize. When I spoke about transferring files from XP to Mac, it not being a problem, I was just talking about data files. I wasn't talking about email. Email is an entirely different scenario.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
There are all sorts of different programs that are used to manage email and your local email mailbox, essentially. So Outlook, you're using on the PC, creates a file. It's called a post office file or .pst file, which is everything in your mailbox, your calendar, your contacts, your emails,
the whole
shoot and match. Okay, so that file is not easily transferable over to the Mac format for Mac Mail. You actually need to convert that into a folder set that could then be read by Mac Mail to be able to integrate all that mail into the new format of Mac Mail. And I haven't looked that closely because I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but I don't think that Microsoft's version of Office for the Mac will read your PST file either.
Oh boy.
So you need to do a conversion. And that's the other software that they gave you. So you convert your Outlook file into a file that can be read and imported into your Mac Mail. Then you should be essentially you should be fine at that point because then the rest is just data files. But you can always try and return the Mac or sell it or something and then get a PC. Now the difference, the new operating system that I would there is Windows 8 is coming out.
And will that be a real big learning curve for those of us who are on XP Pro?
There's going to be essentially two separate interfaces for Windows 8. There's going to be a touch style or tablet style panelized software.
Yeah.
Much more tablet oriented, touch oriented interface, which they're going to try to translate into a PC desktop interface. And that may be a little more difficult to get as a learning curve, but there'll still be that same basic Windows 7 interface available for that.
Mary, thanks a lot. We got to take a break and let us know, if you decide to trade that thing in and go back to PC. I want to hear it next time, all right?
All right. Thank you. Yep. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. It's the Computer Show. More calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Mohawk Valley Garlic and Herb Festival, Canal Place, Little Falls, New York. Garlic and herb growers, garlic cuisine, live music, and more, Saturday, September 8th, 10 to 5. Eat, stink, and be merry. MVGHF.com. Subsidium Technologies, offering custom cloud connectivity, communications, and collaboration network services to clients globally. SubsidiumTech.com. The Digital Berkshire Eagle, an online newspaper for news and information of the Berkshires and beyond. NoInkyFingers.com. And Woodstock School of Art, featuring their exhibit, Woodstock Prints, Past and Present, a survey of Woodstock printmakers, curated by Ron Netsky, September 8th through November 3rd, WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org.
Jake Cunningham is here. It's the Computer Show. We hit the home stretch on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551 with your computer questions, or you can tweet them to WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word, WAMC Vox Pop. Patrick Donges, our producer, will keep an eye out on the Twitter feed and see if you have a question there. Let's go back to the phones, however, and Joanna in Ticonderoga. Joanna, you're on.
Yeah, a couple months ago after my old desktop died, I bought a Contact 15-inch laptop, and I love it. It's fast and everything, except I can't see the keys. The whole thing is black. The keys are black, and it's just killing my eyes. And I feel, what am I going to do with this thing? It's so straining to use it. And so I've been looking at various websites, and I see that Sony and HP have light-colored laptops with white keys or pink keys, and some say they're backlit. And what do you suggest? I don't think I want a Mac. I've been told a Mac has a lighted keyboard because I don't think it'll be compatible with my various, my Photoshop and my printers and all that stuff. So what do you suggest that somebody do that can't see a black laptop?
Well, the first option, of course, would be to have a task lamp that you could shine down on the.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the right. The low cost option would be a task lamp. The second option would be purchasing a separate lit keyboard. So
can you buy those?
Yes.
I've been looking for one myself.
Logitech makes a very nice one.
Okay.
And plug it in with a USB.
You plug it in with USB and it lights up and it's a very nice keyboard. You can do that. Or if you're looking to move to a new PC, I just got a PC for a client. It was a HP 15T3000 or something like that. It comes with Beats Audio and a lit keyboard.
Okay, the lit keyboard would be great.
So you can get, there are computers that have lit keyboards. There are also laptops that have little lights that come out of the top of the top of the screen. It's just a little button you push, and a little tiny lamp shines down on the keyboard.
Well, maybe I have that because it's supposed to have a backlit keyboard, but I don't see where it's doing anything.
Oh, okay, so if it does have a backlit keyboard, then most likely one of the keys along the top row of keys will have a little colored image on it, other than the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the exclamation point, at sign. So it may have a key on there that has something that looks like a straight line with some rays coming out of the top of it, like the sun rising in the east. So it'll often be in a different color. So it may be colored blue. And then on the lower part, lower left-hand part of your keyboard, there should be an FN key that is also colored blue. And if you push and hold the FN key and then push the other key on the top of the keyboard, it should turn off or turn on that feature.
Okay.
Well, maybe that's a simple solution. I just didn't know that.
It's a great idea. You could read the instructions.
No, I didn't. They don't send them.
They don't send them. They come on a CD
or
something like that.
They don't send them anymore? What is this?
But,
okay, well, that's good. I'll look for a lighted laptop or a lighted keyboard, a separate, or I'll find this key first, and if that doesn't work, I'll give this to my husband and
there you go.
Money for a better computer.
Good idea. Joanna, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Ray, I did want to say one other thing about the woman who was copying her Outlook stuff from one computer to another. If you're using Outlook 2003 and before, it has a feature where whenever you email someone, it automatically puts it into this autocomplete pop-up list, such that when the next time you go to email them, you just type the first letter, their last name, and it pops up their email address. That file is not saved anywhere. It's a hidden file. And if you just take your PST and copy it to another computer,
it won't be there.
You won't have all those email addresses that you never actually created contacts for. You just email them back and forth.
Right. So how do you do that? You have to look at the hidden files.
You have
and
to
copy?
Go into your hidden files and create and find the file with a .nk2 extension.
NK2.
And you need to copy that file over to the new computer and then put that in the same directory as your PST file when you start Outlook, and then boom, they all come back.
Wow. Okay,
but
that's great.
It's a very important thing to remember that those email addresses that are in that autocomplete list in Office Outlook 2003 and before are not saved anywhere unless you actually create a contact and save that information. So you need to make sure that you're backing up that file, or there are some software out there that'll periodically take those email addresses and turn them into contacts and save them in the PST.
Yeah.
But generally people don't have that.
No.
But it's a good thing to remember that if they're not saved as contacts, you'll lose them if you don't get that NK2 file.
Very important information. I don't think I've, at home, actually created any contacts. I use that function almost exclusively.
Okay.
So if I go to a new computer, I would have been very upset. But now I know it's NK2, of course. Nina in Saugerties. Nina.
Yes, hi. I have a Mac Lion, and I'm having a problem. Let's say I get in a PDF, like I got an airplane itinerary, and I forwarded it to someone. The formatting is so outrageous, you can't, it makes no sense.
In a PDF?
Or if I get in PDF. or if I have, you know, just even a written summary of something, when I forward it to someone, there's no paragraphing. It's like one long run-on sentence.
Okay, so I think what's probably happening in your scenario is that you've set up your computer to do strictly text-based emails. And so when you receive an HTML-based email, which has formatting and tabs and things like that, and then when you go and forward it, it goes ahead and converts that HTML email into pure text, in which case you lose all the formatting.
Except funny characters.
And you just get text.
Okay.
You may need to tell your email program that you want to be able to allow the use of HTML-based email. I'd have to see it to understand, but because it's not making total sense, because if you have a PDF, PDFs are theoretically uneditable. They are as they are, as they come. You don't edit a PDF. So the formatting shouldn't change inside a PDF, but if you're sending files and you're sending email and you've got, say, columns of things and stuff like that, that formatting can be lost if your email management program is not allowing you to send those formatting characters.
So how do I do this?
Generally, it would be something like, is this a PC or a Mac? Or
a Mac.
It's a Mac. You'd have to go into the settings and what you do is you go into where it says mail at the top, and then there's preferences in there, and then in the preferences you have to go find where it talks about editing or uh-huh. creating the emails, and then you have to tell it what sort of format to use. I don't have a Mac here. I can't see it. I'm just going by.
The format would be an HTML format?
Or rich text, sometimes called rich text. Okay.
All right, Nina, good luck. Let's go to Marie in Schenectady. Marie, you're on Vox Pop.
Hi. I have about a five-year-old Hewlett-Packard computer. It's a Vista. It has Vista on it. And it runs slow, and it tells me when I shut it down and open it up in the morning, it tells me that I have updates that need to be installed. And when I tell it to do it,
it
sometimes takes half hour, 45 minutes to do this. And then if I go into, like, where the, I guess you'd call it the history, and I look at this stuff, and this goes back maybe a year or more, it just lists all of these updates, and it says they failed.
Oh. Yeah. This is a notorious problem with Vista.
Somebody told me that. Is there any way to correct it?
Other
than getting
upgrade.
A new computer?
You could... Well, it depends.
I don't know much about computers. I actually thought when I bought this computer, it'll last me till I die. But
well, what you might be
it doesn't work that way.
No, you live too long.
You might you might be able to. You might be able to actually download what's called essentially a rolled up update, which would give you all the updates to Vista. In one file that you could get from Microsoft.
You said download a what kind of a file?
It's called a rolled up, I mean, the vernacular would be a rolled up update, but it would be a cumulative service pack for Vista.
Okay, I still want to write that rolled.
No, don't, that's not important.
Yeah, cumulative is probably
cumulative service pack.
Cumulative service pack.
Service pack, and that might get you with all those updates, and then you go ahead, you just run one program that updates everything. The Windows update feature is failing under Vista, and it really, I mean, there's not much you can do.
Is this cumulative service pack? Is it something I get one of my sons to do this for me to find it online?
Well, you could find it. You could go to Microsoft and just type in Vista service packs. Go to Microsoft.com and type in Vista service packs and find the latest service pack and see if you can download that file and install it. And then it might get some of that stuff. The other problem may be that there could be a virus or an infection or something that's causing the updates to fail.
Okay. Have you done a virus scan, Marie?
I run, what is that? There's something I run on a, some kind of cleaner, a PC cleaner or something, I think, one of those things I have on there. You know, I've done that. I don't really know a whole lot about computers.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, see if you can download the latest service pack for Vista and then and try that there. Then you'll probably want to download something like Malwarebytes and do a quick check on your computer to see if it's infected.
That's malwarebytes.org, correct?
Mm-hmm. Malware.
M-A-L-W-A-R-E-B-Y-T-E-S.
.org. And I tell you, Marie, it is very helpful. It is free, and it is a very good scan for your computer. It's very handy to do that.
Okay.
Thanks, Marie. Let's go to Susan in Poughkeepsie. Susan.
Hi. I just have a really quick and inexpensive solution for the lady who called who couldn't see her keyboard very well a few minutes ago. If you go to the website for Lighthouse, which is for people with vision problems, there is a huge array of stickers, keyboard stickers, that you can buy with different color contrast that you add onto a keyboard, which would be a really easy way to solve her problem.
She Brilliant.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Okay. What's the website?
White or white on black or yellow.
Lighthouse.
Lighthouse? For the blind, yeah. But they have things for people with low vision. And this is something they have available.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
Thank you,
Susan. I do
that
myself, because I work at about 5 o'clock in the morning on my computer, and it's always very – I'm always hitting the wrong key and going backspace and cursing the fact that I didn't do as well in typing as I should have in high school. Simon in Tannersville. Simon.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon.
Welcome.
I have a laptop with Windows XP Home Edition, and I have a partition in there, which was actually put in by Microsoft with me on the phone some years back because of a problem I had then. What I'm running into now is it keeps telling me I'm out of space because the half partition that I've been using is completely full. And when I try to do various things that I've tried to extend the partition, it won't let me do that. Despite, you know, Microsoft told me at that time that it would be an easy thing to remove the partition, but it keeps telling me messages like, because my system is on the original partition, therefore it won't let me extend it. So I'm left with half an empty hard drive, and I still have a full well, giving messages. What do I do?
What I would suggest you do is on your hard drive. What you're going to have to do is get into the disk management feature in Windows.
Right.
The easy way to do that is to right click on my computer and click manage. Left click, right click to get the sub menu, left click on manage, and then there will be an option there to go to disk management. In the disk management, it will show you all the hard drives you have and any partitions that are on those hard drives. And if you find the partition that you want to remove or use, you can delete that partition and make it available space. And then if it's not going to allow you to, quote unquote, extend your existing hard drive, which it probably won't, because you would need something like Partition Magic, which is a different program, because Microsoft doesn't really allow through their software to take an existing hard drive that's just set up and then make it bigger. Partition Magic will do that, but Microsoft won't. So your option really will be to create another hard drive on your system, and then you'd be able to use that to copy files over to. So it would be similar to an external drive. It would just be inside your computer. You would then go ahead and set up that hard, you would go ahead and format that partition, which you click on the partition and select format inside the disk management feature. And then that would go ahead and automatically create another hard drive in your system, even though it's a virtual hard drive, essentially, because you have one drive in there that's being split into two by partition. But it will show up in your system as a hard drive that you could copy to. So if you have a C drive, and you'll then have a C and a D drive, and then you'd be able to copy things to that other drive, and that would give you the space that you would need.
Simon, I'm afraid to say we're out of time. Good luck. Let us know how you did, and call us next time when Jake is back. Jake Cunningham, thanks a lot for being here.
Ray, it's my pleasure.
What's the new brew at Chatham Brewing?
We just came out with a blueberry wheat.
Nice.
Nice, very light, a little bit of that tart wheat taste balanced against a nice blueberry notes, and then you can throw a couple blueberries in the pint glass, and it's delicious.
We should probably be drinking beer when we do this show.
We should. I was thinking about bringing some.
Maybe next time. Support for WAMC comes from SPAC, presenting Saratoga Wine and Food and Fall Ferrari Festival, featuring wine tasting, cooking seminars, and more, September 7th through 9th, SPAC.org. The Bard Conservatory Preparatory Division, offering conservatory musical education for ages 1 to 18, accepting applications for the music and movement class, trial class September 8th, bard.edu/conservatory/preparatory. And the Unitarian Universalist Congregations of the Capital Region, where people gather together to nurture their spirits and help heal the world, capitalregionu-u.org. All right, that's it. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Our phones were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Patrick Donges. Thanks again to Jake Cunningham and to all of you for calling in. I hope you enjoyed the program. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Call earlier next time. Coming up next, it's the news.